for some fanatics. Today is April 1st, 2024. I'm Jay Edmondson Hasbatcher, here with my compatriot Benji.
Hello, folks.
We are back once again to discuss the world's greatest comic, The Fantastic Four. Benji, what issues are we covering today?
Well, Jay, we are going back to where it all began. Back to year 1961. Are you ready for some Silver Age sugar in your coffee?
Will you be having coffee cake today, Benji?
Jay, you know I do not enjoy sweets. But I did enjoy this first tale. Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, with assistance from George Klein and Christopher Rule, present the Fantastic Four One. The Fantastic Four. Cover date November of 1961.
Yuri Gagarin was the first person to be shot into space in April of 1961. What an exciting time to be writing science fiction. It must feel like anything you can imagine is possible.
Yeah, that's about all I can take, Eddie. Hey, everyone, it's April Fools! Did you realize it? What gave it away? Was it when I said that Eddie was drinking coffee? Or is it when I said I didn't enjoy sweets?
I laughing at your own jokes is a thing that I think is frowned on by some people, but I just can't help it sometimes. I enjoyed that so much, James B.
We did something funny before for April Fools, but I don't know what it was.
You don't remember?
Was it the Choose Your Own Adventure? No.
I rewrote the summaries and had parts that were fictional that didn't actually happen. And Kevin Ewing was like, I was talking. He was like, you were talking. He's like, that doesn't happen. Then I'm like, April Fools. Once again, was very tickled by my own jokes. In that
We should have Kevin Ewing on soon. Let's get Kevin Ewing on in the next week or so.
Yes.
A couple things. Let's really do the Fantastic Four, though, today.
I'm so excited. This is my age.
Yeah, I know you've been wanting to do a Silver Age book. We'll do the Fantastic Four today. We'll see how it goes. But real quick, I think we should still play our regular music. So without further ado, let's get our intro out of the way. Let's read Spider-Man.
That feels better. Into our summary. With a flare shot to the sky, Reed Richards calls the Fantastic Four together. We see our four heroes' superpowers on display as they trek to meet up. Once together, they recall their backstory of being irradiated while traveling into outer space. Although there is some discord within the group, they unite to use their powers to help mankind.
Eddie, in the early comics, Sue doesn't do too much. She'll discover more powerful abilities later, but the thing shows everyone he's strong. He tells everyone he's unhappy. Reed is smart, but he's very mean to Sue. It's going to take years for him to shape up. Johnny is popular. He's reckless. He's seen so often melting cars he's driving when he suddenly changed into the Human Torch immediately instead of stepping out of the car first. So dumb. But being a mess is what makes him a great team. These Silver Age books are also told in chapters, so essentially the introduction of this book is completely over. And now it's like, you know, the next chapter two, part two, you know, we'll finally get an adventure. So take it away.
Their first small task is to figure out why nuclear power plants are disappearing into holes in the Earth. Reed Richards pinpoints the source to Monster Island, and so they fly there. On Monster Island, some astonishing beasts separate Johnny and Reed from Sue and Ben. Johnny and Reed find themselves trapped in the Mole Man's lair until their compatriots link back up with them. Together, they attempt to bring the Mole Man to the surface, but are stopped by an army of underground gargoyles. The Fantastic Four escape by plane as Reed utters,
"He'll never trouble anyone again." Yeah.
Never.
No. I like the plausibility that there could be an underground world that we don't know about. We also have another Silver Age villain that is caused because society, you know, rejected him. So there's that.
It is a sad story, the story of Mulvan.
We're going to cover these books about the same way here. Quick little summaries. Obviously, a lot of people know the history of the Fantastic Four. You wouldn't be listening to the show to learn about it in that much detail, but this hopefully will get you familiar with some of the original books and what happened in them. And the second book is from January of 1962, The Fantastic Four 2, Meet the Skrulls from Outer Space by Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, and inked by George Klein.
A series of crimes committed by the Skrull, an alien race, impersonating our heroes, forces the Fantastic Four into hiding. When the army surrounds their cabin in the woods, they surrender and are imprisoned. But the prison doesn't hold them for long. They construct a scheme to oust the imposters. Johnny destroys a launch pad, and the Skrulls help him escape back to their base, thinking he's one of them. Reed, Sue, and Ben soon arrive and defeat the Skrull.
I never met a Skrull in my comic books that was a good guy. So it was a blind side when you watched the Captain Marvel MCU movie and the Skrulls are the good guys and the Kree are the bad guys. It was super clever writing to, you know, twist the world of readers for, you know, 50 years. So well done. But right now, Skrulls are bad and they'll always be bad.
Using a Skrull spaceship, the Fantastic Four blast to the mothership, where they convince the Skrull leader Earth is filled with monsters and space mines. The leader is quickly convinced that they must leave the galaxy immediately, and the Fantastic Four, who everyone thinks are Skrulls still in disguise, say they will return to Earth to sacrifice themselves, ensuring the Skrull can safely escape.
The Fantastic Four showed the police chief the shape-shifting Skrulls. They discuss how to jail them, afraid that the Skrulls will shapeshift into small animals like a caterpillar or an insect or something and then escape through the jail bars. So the Fantastic Four get permission from the police and... hypnotize the Skrulls, convincing them they are cows. Eddie, 20 years later in Fantastic Four Annual 17, which I've read, the milk from these cows causes problems for the townspeople.
Oh!
Great writing. You know, the world's greatest comic in 1962, it may have been. Let's see if that keeps up here. From March of 1962, The Fantastic Four 3, The Menace of the Miracle Man by Lee, Kirby, and inks by Saul Brodsky.
The Fantastic Four are at the Miracle Man's show, impressed by his seemingly impossible acts. But when the Miracle Man brings a space monster prop to life, the team hops on their fantastic car and into action. But the fight against the plaster and wood monster prop is short, with Johnny torching it. Miracle Man then confounds Reed, Johnny, and Ben, and steals an atomic tank. Thankfully, Sue hops invisible onto the back of it. But without Sue, Johnny and Ben fight, and Johnny storms off. Pun prize for me there, everyone.
The commissioner really lays into Reed, Eddie, for letting the Miracle Man go. He chews him out for two full panels.
Whew.
Yeah, Reed apologizes. He says sorry, and the commissioner's like, sorry? Is that the best answer I can get from Mr. Fantastic?
It's a great line.
You talked about this a couple times, but, you know, Spider-Man doesn't have these problems, right? He's not in with the police. He doesn't get the benefits, but he also doesn't get the flack when things don't go his way.
That's right. Well, Sue is discovered by the Miracle Man and hypnotized. Thankfully, Reed and Ben find them, only to have the Miracle Man take off with Sue in his atomic tank again. Johnny joins the pursuit and stops him by blinding him with his light. Reed explains that the Miracle Man produces no miracles. He is just a clever hypnotist that fooled everyone. Johnny is still angry at being bossed around and flies off, with Reed worried he might turn against them.
Yeah, Johnny throws his hissy fit while the Miracle Man is like standing there, just having been foiled. I'm like, where's the Miracle Man during all this? Like, just standing right there watching them fight. But it's another great book. And if you look up the 10 greatest Fantastic Four villains of all time, which I did, you know, they're in our first book, our second book, our fourth book, and our fifth book. This guy never made it. Sorry. This reads like a really good Batman detective mystery. Still a great book, but Miracle Man, I apologize. You're just kind of forgettable. Our next book that does have one of our great villains, sort of, is from April of 1962, The Fantastic Four 4, The Coming of ...Submariner by Lee Kirby and inks again by Saul Brodsky.
The Fantastic Four are only three to begin this book, despite a verbal altercation between Reed and Ben blaming each other for Johnny quitting the team. The team goes looking for Johnny. When Ben finds Johnny, he picks a car up and throws it at him. And then Ben turns into a human. Johnny takes the chance to escape when Ben turns back into the Thing.
Johnny never really leaves the Fantastic Four the way that...
Not really.
No, but I mean, just spoiler for future, he's not going to, like Ben will, like, leave for times, and even Sue, I think, will take some time off once in a while, but...
He's being a petulant teenager.
Right yeah, now. Yeah, he's not going to, he's around, he's, although, while the Fantastic Four books are going on, Strange Tales has become the book that the Human Torch is sort of in by himself. Like, he's sort of still running in a separate book that he's, like, the star of in the Fantastic Four kind of cameo in his book. But speaking of Johnny, you know, he's part of this team and it adds so much interplay that's so fun. Spider-Man working alone, you know, it's got to be really hard to write. You need a lot of thought bubbles. There's no in-team fighting with Spider-Man. Reed Richards just being the boss and being kind of a jerk in the early books, he just fights with everyone. So there's always conflict there. He's the smart guy. He's the leader and everybody's fighting with him all the time. Johnny's a close second. Like you said, petulant teenager. Speaking of Johnny, well, let's get back to the story. Where does he go, Eddie?
Johnny hides that night in a shady hotel in Lower Manhattan and discovers he's found a very disheveled Submariner. Namor doesn't remember who he is until Johnny dumps him in the sea. Namor finds his undersea kingdom destroyed by atomic tests and tells Johnny he will have his revenge against mankind.
Way to go, Johnny. Good job throwing this guy in the ocean.
I wondered that. Realizing his mistake, Johnny calls his teammates, and they fight a giant sea creature. Namor has awakened with a special sea horn. The Thing blows up the creature with an atomic bomb strapped to his back, and Sue steals the horn, only to have Namor catch her and declare she should be his bride. I love this book. The rest of the guys aren't too happy about that, so Johnny creates a tornado separating Namor from his horn and flopping him and his monsters back into the sea.
And Namor, by the way, in the MCU now, if you didn't catch when he showed up a couple movies ago, but this is not his origin story because he was written back in the days with the original Human Torch and Captain America years and years ago, so he's being pulled into the current storyline, the way Captain America gets pulled into Avengers, Namor gets pulled in here. Ironically, also in book four. Spider-Man villains, they get captured a lot, and they have to escape, but Submariner gets away. Like Dr. Doom, who we're going to talk about soon, the best villains, they don't get captured. So Submariner, he's going to be a reoccurring pain in the butt here with the Fantastic Four, and this romance with Sue is really intriguing because they don't just write it off with, like, get away from me, you monster. They leave just enough there, and yeah, it's a fine writing job by Stan Lee with this.
I'd like to also note how incredibly powerful Reed is. In these four books, he snatches an atomic missile out of the air. He becomes a tire for a car they are driving, and he traps a monster by making a web with his body. This monster being, like, three stories tall, probably. He's not just a jerk, he's just the most powerful one of the four by some measure, I think.
Yeah, but in a way also, Reed Richards is kind of like super lame, right? Nobody really likes Reed Richards. You complain about him in the Spider-Man books all the time, don't you?
I do. It's true. He's a boring character.
Yeah, and in a lot of podcasts, people rank on Reed Richards. They think he's evil. They think he's a villain sort of in his own way because he's mean to everybody else and he's selfish and he doesn't think about other people. It's not like he's altruistic in certain ways. Like, true. He gets a lot of flack. They always think, oh, the world would have been better if Reed Richards wasn't in it, even though...
Interesting. You
know, yeah, he gets a lot of grief.
I've always thought that is because he's a genius, and he just has such a low tolerance for the people around him who cannot understand all the things he understands, too. So
it's clever writing again, right?
Yes. So,
Now we need to find an evil genius to battle against Reed so they have someone to challenge him. Let's see if we can find one in our next book, which is from July of 1962, The Fantastic Four, number 5, Prisoners of Dr. Doom, by Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, and inks by Saul Brodsky.
Dr. Doom has surrounded the Fantastic Four's headquarters with an electrified asbestos net. Seeing little way through the net, they succumb to Doom's demand and offer Sue as a hostage and as collateral to ensure that the Fantastic Four do Doom's bidding. What does Doom demand? For the boys to go back in time and retrieve Blackbeard's treasure chest. Doom teleports Reed, Johnny, and Ben back to the 1600s in the Caribbean.
It's disappointing that Sue is a prisoner again.
Poor Sue.
I promise not to make too big a deal of it. Again, it's just something the world knows about. So I am happy we are back on a sci-fi book and not a detective story. Let's have the Fantastic Four be the sci-fi book, and let's leave that whole hypnotism and other nonsense to street-level heroes like Daredevil.
Back in time, the Fantastic Four boys quickly find pirate disguises, they get drugged in a tavern, and are kidnapped as crew onto a pirate ship. Once aboard, the Thing breaks his bonds. And with some help from Reed, and Johnny, and the frightened pirates, boards and plunders a galleon laden with treasure. The crew pledges their allegiance to Ben, who's wearing a Blackbeard as his disguise. And the Fantastic Four, Reed and Johnny, figure out that Ben is the legendary Blackbeard. Reed prepares them to return to their own time, only to find Ben unwilling to go. A storm stops all their bickering, and before they return, they empty Blackbeard's treasure chest and fill it with chains. For they had only promised Dr. Doom to, quote, bring him the treasure chest of Blackbeard, unquote.
One of my favorite comic book stories of all time. Okay, it's because of the time travel element. Everyone in my family knows I just eat up time travel shows constantly.
Wow, interesting.
And the clever twist that they create with Blackbeard, oh, I love it so much. I've quoted this story to different people, like, you know, there's a story in the Fantastic Four. Like, I talk about this all the time. But, of course, this is the first appearance of Dr. Doom. It's not really supposed to be about Blackbeard, even though that's all I see. So let's just see how this little Dr. Doom story concludes.
Doom is unhappy the chest is not treasure and tries to kill the Fantastic Four. But Sue blows up Doom's machines and frees Reed, Johnny, and Ben. The Fantastic Four make a remarkable escape but are unable to stop Doom from jetpacking away. Reed declares the team will devote their lives to catching Doom, and from the previous issue, the Submariner. It's pretty hard not to be a great character when your name is Dr. Doom.
No, the Green Goblin isn't very strong a name, but he turned out to be okay. But I get your point, though. It's very good.
Well, James, I think it's pretty clear you are much better versed in the Fantastic Four than me, but I think it's pretty interesting that less than a year before the release of Spider-Man, these early books came out. Several times we see the Fantastic Four have a massive, fancy facility at their disposal to help them with any problem, and they are working in conjunction with the law enforcement without fear of, you know, any kind of arrest. There's only one traumatic aspect that overshadows the team, and it's that Ben is devastated at losing his human appearance. He's in the trench coat and glasses, and they emphasize it several times. But this really, to me, seems like peanuts compared to Peter's social outcast status that he's nearly constantly harassed about. His appearance isn't even altered, and, you know, he's not accepted by anyone that's around him. Besides that, we also know that Spider-Man is constantly at odds with the law.
I think Peter's accepted relatively quick, though. He gets accepted maybe 50 issues in, maybe 20 issues past meeting Liz Allen. He's already on his way.
I guess so, but I don't know if Flash comes around for at least 100 to 150.
Hold on. You can't compare how Flash Thompson feels about Peter Parker to the Thing being unable to live his life as
yeah, but I know, but like, I guess, you know, it's that Peter has these deep secrets that he's unable to kind of, that's what's one of the biggest problems with his status is that he feels he has to be like that to hide the fact that he's a superhero constantly. He can't just knock Flash out because everyone will know, whoa, there's something, you know, special about this guy. So he has to embrace the inner nerd that, you know, he's seen as. Ben Grimm, like, I know it's a bummer. You're, like, covered in rocks, but you're, like, impenetrable and super strong. And you just go chill in your fancy
Spider-Man
tower.
Spider-Man is impenetrable and super strong as well.
He's constantly harassed by the public. He can't, like, appear on a talk show like Ben Grimm could appear on a talk show.
You're targeting different things here. If you're going to debate me on this in any way, you can't just shotgun shot anything that sort of fits your narrative. Is your argument that it's better to be Ben Grimm than it's better to be Peter Parker? Is that what you're going to say? Because pick something.
Yeah, I think it's better to be Ben Grimm than to be Peter Parker.
You're crazy because Ben Grimm is a big, giant, ugly rock creature. Who cares if he's accepted? The Human Torch is the cool member of his team. Sue is the pretty member of his team. Reed is the smart member of his team. And he's just like the ugly member of his team. So, you know, he's also harassed constantly by the Yancey Street Gang, who just literally makes fun of him all the time. Who cares that he's, you know, he's just like last choice of this. Whereas Spider-Man could, as we've seen many times, quit being Spider-Man. Sure, it bothers him, but that's his problem. It's his problem to be bothered with it.
True.
The Thing is going to spend so much effort, and Reed's going to spend so much effort to make him look human again. It's going to be the plot line of many, many comics because they're going for it. What's Peter Parker's problem? It's going to be that he wants
just his moral dilemma, but I acquiesce. James B., you know more about the Fantastic Four than I do.
Well, no, it's fine. It's a good comparison. They both struggle with different ways. The argument that you could make is that Spider-Man's mental strife is stronger than the physical strife that the Thing goes for. And I'd say, yeah, you're right.
It's an internal battle.
It's harder for Peter, possibly mentally, than
he has no one to support him in these. You know, he has no teammates too.
Well, they're both going to be well past this. You know, when their books hit the 300 marks, because The Thing's going to be content with who he is by then, and he'll be running around with, you know, with his second girlfriend at least, and obviously, you know, Peter Parker's going to be married, so they'll have some of the things they need. Eddie, you did mention that Spider-Man is constantly at odds with the law. You know, the X-Men are also always in trouble with the law. They're never accepted. Yes. And Spider-Man and the X-Men get those movies pretty early because it's very popular to be like at odds with the man, you know, the wrestlers who are like, oh, that wrestler, he's, you know, he's a bad guy, but like he's fighting the man, then becomes like a good guy, you know, the bad boys. So Spider-Man and the X-Men, yeah, they struggle with society and people like cheer for them anyway. So that's why they're pretty popular. All right, Eddie, it's time for our sponsor.
Okay.
Today's sponsor is the Tourism Department of Latveria. Did you know the Kingdom of Latveria is a small country in Europe and home to many of the hottest new destinations? Come visit famous landmarks such as Doom Falls, the Latverian Academy of the Sciences, the Folding City, and Castle Von Doom. Flights to Doom airports are limited, so act today. Eddie, are you interested in taking a flight of Doom to Latveria again? I think a few years ago you used Doom Charter, right?
Doom Charter has been around for a while now. I did not have anything to do with Doom Charter. I must say, as stated before, the name Doom, it strikes a lot of fear in me and probably just about everybody else.
Yeah, well, still a sponsor. Did you notice that the Fantastic Four book that Dr. Doom appears in is number 5? And the Spider-Man book that Dr. Doom appears in the first time is Spider-Man 5.
I did not realize
that. The one vintage book you own, I believe.
It's true. That's my special book that I have.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, Eddie, how can people reach us?
You can email us at letsreadspiderman@gmail.com or click on the link in this podcast description to join our Discord channel and connect with us through social media. Listeners, did you enjoy this change of pace? Do you want to hear more about the Fantastic Four occasionally, or do you just want Spider-Man 24/7?
Actually, we only release 3 episodes every 2 weeks, so it's not like 24/7. And they're only like 25 minutes long. So really, they're not going to get 25 minutes.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. It's a long episode, by the way.
It's very long.
So you're not going to get too much here.
No. Well, let's, you know, we don't have to talk about Jack Kirby. I didn't.
We have to say something after the show, though, so you have to talk. Yeah,
I like the comic. I like that Johnny's reading the comic. That's fine with me. It's okay with you.
Does it show a picture of, which book is it in, remember?
It's this last one, 5.
All right.
It's like 2 pages of him, or a whole, yeah, it's like 3 panels of him reading the Hulk.
All right, I had to make a decision how much I wanted to read this book, because at 7:10 when I was leaving work, getting ready to drive home, I didn't know if we were doing this book because you hadn't done it.
The Fantastic Four made me think 4 books. Why would we do 5 for the Fantastic Four? It's not the Fantastic Five.
Sure, sure. Sorry that it said FF1-5. You also titled it FF1-5 in your thing. No. At the top.
I know. Well, I've been working off of my one monitor, so the 1-5 was like not in the title. That I like, as soon as you said that, I expanded it. I'm like, oh darn.
Did you see in book 5 that Johnny Storm is reading a Hulk book?
Yeah, he says, "Great new comic, Mag Reed. Say, you know something? I'll be doggone it if this monster doesn't remind me of The Thing."
Very funny. Give me that mag, Squirt. I'll teach you to compare me to a comic book monster.
Hey! If you want to be so bad, I'll warm it up for you, big man.
Ouch! Come back here!
Come and get me!
We could do this all day. This is what they do all the time. And then the adults have to get involved all the time to stop these two from... And they do so much damage all the time to the building.
But it's like this, yeah, it's like Johnny Storm belting the cars.